Welcome to this edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. It is the start of week four of the season. I'm Teddy Cahill. We've got Joe Healy here again with me, and we're going to talk a little bit about get ready for the fourth weekend of college baseball. For some places, that means the start of conference play, looking at the ACC, particularly on that one. Some teams are doing some tournaments still. We've got a big one out in L.A., that Joe is going to be at, and you know, for a lot of teams, it's just a chance to really settle into the course of the season here, Joe. And as we get in almost a month into the season, it's already flying by us.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, last week I talked about how I was already depressed because the season was almost over, and see, you're making my point for me now. It's a weird weekend, in that it's exciting to have ACC start their conference play. I mean, that's always exciting when teams start playing in their conference, and it really kind of helps us get perspective on what's what. But to a point you've made on the show before, week four is also an opportunity for some of these teams that are going to go through the grind of the conference season to scale back a little bit, maybe get a little bit healthy if they've got a guy or two who's maybe a little dinged up, a week away from being ready to go, those kinds of things, or just to kind of get right if they've got some questions. So it kind of ends up being a weird week where you've got a lot of stuff that we're probably not going to pay a ton of attention to unless something crazy happens, but also a condensed group of games that we're going to be paying a lot of attention to. I'm excited to get out to LA. We'll obviously talk about that in more depth as we go. But in addition to that tournament, we've got, Michigan's out there playing Pepperdine, which I'll be there for at least one of those games over the weekend. So that's kind of worked out in my favor that is going on as well. That's kind of a nice little bonus. And look, I mean, if you got a chance to get out to Malibu and you don't, like, that's a problem. Like, if you get a chance to get out there, you got to get a chance to get out to Malibu. So it'll be my first time out there, so I'm excited about seeing one of the best backdrops in college baseball.
Yeah, I think I mentioned on Monday's podcast that I feel like the focus of college baseball this weekend is going to shift west between the what they're calling the Southern California College Baseball Classic, the artist formerly known as the Dodger Stadium College Baseball Classic, and if you're really old, you might remember it as the Dodgertown Classic Tournament. I don't remember what they called it before Dodgertown in Florida told them to cut it out, and they renamed it the Dodger Stadium Classic. So there's that thing going on in L.A., the Pepperdine-Michigan series is very intriguing as Pepperdine is off to a flying start. You have UCSB going up to play Oregon State. UCSB just gave UCLA their first loss this week in the midweek, and now gets a chance to go up and take on the Beavers in Corvallis. And that'll be Mitch Canham's first home game in charge as Oregon State head coach. So there's a lot going on out west this weekend, which is fun. And then out on the East Coast, you have the ACC starting. So what's going on in the middle of the country? I mean, I'm usually very attuned to that, and I know you are as well, Joe, as a fellow Midwesterner. But this weekend, it's going to be very very much coastal, both in the ACC and out on the West Coast. That's really going to be the focus for us on this podcast, and honestly, probably on Mondays as well.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on in the middle of the country, at least north of, the Mason-Dixon line, if you will, is a lot of teams coming home for the first time. I mean, it is kind of that time of year when those Big Ten teams, Missouri Valley teams, start to get settled back at home and start to play some home games after having been on the road for the first few weeks of the season. So that's a big deal for those teams as well, and a lot of times they open up a little with something a little softer just to kind of get back into the routine of playing at home. So certainly that's going to be out of the limelight, but for those teams, it's a big deal to be able to start to play some home games, because that's when that's when these teams try to make a little hay, because some of them have taken a beating being on the road, as you would expect. So it's big for them to be able to play some home games and sleep in their own beds a little more often and try to get rolling from there.
All right, so we're going to get into it here in a second, but first I want to get us a word from our sponsor, Roman. If you were to guess, Joe, on average, how many days people in the U.S. have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say?
Okay, so are we counting weekend days?
I think you do.
Okay.
Because you're still sick on the weekend. It doesn't take a break.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say 24.
Americans have to wait around 29 days, so you're close, Joe, to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, Roman's Pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to getroman.com/BA for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's getroman.com/BA for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. Now, Joe, we mentioned the tournament in Los Angeles now being called the Southern California Classic. That is because Dodger Stadium is under renovations in advance of the All-Star Game this summer. The LA Times tweeted a video from inside the stadium the other day, and if you're curious, I retweeted it. You can find it on my account, at Ted Cahill, and it makes it pretty clear that they could not have played in Dodger Stadium this weekend. So the format, which usually is USC and UCLA co-hosting, they bring out two teams. Those two teams play at USC and UCLA on Friday and Saturday, and then everyone convenes at Dodger Stadium on Sunday, culminating with a USC-UCLA rivalry game that annually draws 10,000 fans or so into Dodger Stadium. The format is largely the same, but instead of convening at Dodger Stadium, they will conclude the thing over at USC. The field this year, in addition to the co-hosts, is TCU and Vanderbilt. And it's a fun-looking field. You have UCLA, which was undefeated up until Tuesday night when they lost to Santa Barbara. They've been pitching incredibly well this season. You have Vanderbilt. We've spent a fair amount of time discussing Vanderbilt here. TCU, which is off to a really nice start and moved into the top 25 this week for the first time at having won 10 of their first 12. And USC, which has a new coach in Jason Gill, some excitement around the program. We'll see where the results are at this point, but it's a new look USC right now, and so it's an intriguing field that you're going out to see this weekend.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. For a number of reasons. One, another look at Vanderbilt. I obviously saw them opening weekend, and it's been a weird year for them. I mean, they opened with a 1-2 weekend in Arizona, and you're kind of willing to let that go because the competition was good and it's opening weekend and so on and so forth. Then they looked dominant for a couple of weeks, a couple weeks worth of games anyway. They had midweek games along the way, and you're like, okay, they're back on track, and they struggle so mightily with Hawaii this past weekend. And so I'll be interested to kind of see what they look like against good competition again. I suspect they'll be back on track. UCLA, kind of, you laid it out there with UCLA. I mean, UCLA is always a pitching first outfit, but the numbers this year are just kind of absurd to this point. And I remember kind of saying this last year coming out of when I saw them against Georgia Tech. I mean, but a 1.43 team ERA is,
is that good?
It is pretty good. Yeah, it is pretty good. I can confirm that. I don't know much, but I know that 1.43 team ERA is good. So, but the difference this year, last year their offense was good, but this year's offense, I think, there was some concern about it because, okay, last year's offense was good, but you're losing these guys. Michael Tolia et al., if you will. And this year, though, I mean, the guys that we kind of looked at as needing to step up, Matt McClain chief among them, have been outstanding, and it's kind of helped elevate that offense back to about what they were last year. But I'm looking forward to kind of seeing that in person and seeing that against tougher competition. USC is interesting as well. You mentioned the new head coach, and there's some talent there. And I mentioned this when I did my Pac-12 preview, that the talent that's assembled at USC is not what you might have expected with, a team that's being taken over by new coaching staff. A lot of times there's like a hard reset when you have that happen in the team. A lot of times there's kind of a dearth of talent. That is certainly not the case with USC. I mean, they've got, pitchers in Kyle Hurt and John Beller that would pitch for a lot of other teams in the Pac-12 and around the country, and Jamal O'Gwin in the lineup, who's a highly thought of prospect. And so there's some pieces there. And so, you know, I haven't laid eyes on USC myself this season, so I think that'll be a good look for me. And then TCU, I think, is probably the team that I'm most interested in, just from the standpoint of we know what UCLA and Vanderbilt are bringing to the table. And Mike Rooney on our show a couple weeks ago said, I think TCU's talent level is back to what we're used to it being when they were making those trips to Omaha annually. And certainly I liked the talent because, you know, I picked them as my Omaha sleeper this year. So I'm interested to see. We've got them in the top 25 now, but are they, is that kind of what their ceiling is, or do they show us something else this weekend by winning a couple of games? Do they show us the ceiling is even better than that? I suspect that it's just hard to say. I suspect that maybe we'll come out of it saying the answer is somewhere in between the two. But certainly the opportunity is there for them to announce in a big way that, hey, you know, TCU is TCU again, at least to this point of the season.
Yeah, I think that what they've shown us so far has been pretty intriguing. They have some nice, really nice series wins. They start with a sweep of Kentucky. Now, obviously, there are questions about just how good Kentucky is this year, having also now been swept at home by UNC Wilmington. But anyway, TCU very easily handed Kentucky three losses to start the season. Then they went up to Minnesota and handily won that series. And then they swept Cal back at home this last weekend. And again, some questions right now about how good Cal is. But those are three solid series wins that are going to resonate all year long. And now the level of competition is going to be a little higher because you're going out on the road and you're going to have to take on some really good competition out on the West Coast. And I think that, you know, what TCU has this year is they brought in a lot of new talent from the junior college ranks, from the freshman class, and it's mixing really well with what they had already. And so, yeah, I'm very interested to see what that looks like this weekend, and I'm pretty interested to see what, you know, USC has this weekend. It's kind of really the first big test for the Trojans. You know, they played Western Michigan and Seton Hall at home. And then they also played in the Tony Gwynn Classic. This is different. There are going to be a lot more eyes on what happens this weekend. And, you know, four players like Jamal O'Gwin and Ben Ramirez and John Beller that are, you know, older players that have been producing pretty well for the Trojans. Okay, now you get to do that. But now you're going to have to do that on a higher level or a higher level of competition. And what is that going to look like, and how are they ready, or are they ready for that? Because what follows this weekend is the start of Pac-12 play, and they get a Washington team coming to USC that's a really solid team that is experienced and that is going to make your life pretty difficult. So I think these next two weekends are going to let us know a lot about what USC is and what to expect from the Trojans for the rest of the season.
I mean, but don't look now. If we're going to look ahead a little bit with USC, I mean, they do have an opportunity in Pac-12 play to make a little hay and kind of prove a little something, and maybe show that it's at the very least kind of a middle of the pack 12 team with aspirations for more. Because after Washington, they get Oregon. Now it's a road series, but they get Oregon. That's a rebuilding program as well, and you don't quite know what to expect there week to week. They get Arizona at home. You know, Arizona's been pretty inconsistent, and
I'd much rather have that at home.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And then they got Washington State and Stanford coming back to back right after that. Hell, Cal is right behind that, and those are three teams that, you know, have been a little bit inconsistent to begin the season. And so I think there's an opportunity for, I say all that to say, an opportunity for USC to get a little bit of a quick start in Pac-12 play. And what that ends up, you know, maybe this is a down pack year. I mean, we just talked about how some teams that we thought were going to be in the mix to be in regionals, like Cal and Stanford, are off to inconsistent and slow starts. So maybe it's just that it ends up being a year when the pack is a little bit down, and so being what USC ends up being, maybe just isn't a regional team, but the record is good. Maybe that's what it ends up being. But certainly, I look at the schedule and I see an opportunity for USC to make a little hay and to pile up some wins early on. And who knows? You know, maybe the wind is in their sails at that point, and they take off. So that's obviously a little higher level of analysis than I certainly expect to do with USC, but I just found it interesting that in terms of their toughest Pac-12 series, namely Arizona State, Oregon State, and UCLA, it's very, very backloaded.
Yeah, that is definitely the case. And but given how the pack is shaking out this year, it's going to be pretty easy to be front loaded or back loaded, at least right now, the way we're evaluating it. There are only two Pac-12 teams in the top 25. They both happen to reside in the top 10. And then after that, you know, we've had Arizona this year. They just fell out. I like Washington. Listeners of this podcast have probably heard me say that several times over the last 4 or 5 years. I like what Washington has this year. I think that they could, be a pretty solid team. But we have to see still. The jury's still out on the Huskies right now. And, Oregon State is sitting under 500 right now. So that's a team that we expect to be better and I think will be. But, you know, right now they're under 500. So it's an interesting pack here. And that means that if USC is able to get going a little bit, you know, there is room for them to, for upward momentum that they maybe haven't had over the last few years here. One thing I am overarchingly looking forward to in this tournament is that the pitching all looks very good. You know, we know what we have on the mound, you know, with UCLA. We know what we have with Vanderbilt, a little less so with Kumar Rocker not starting last week maybe. But presumably, if he weren't able to start this week, you would insert Jack Leiter, who did not pitch on Tuesday, where he had typically been starting this season. So even if it winds up being Leiter instead of Rocker, that's still extraordinary. And then TCU has pitched at a really high level this year. They have a 2.13 team ERA, and you know, you've got guys like Johnny Ray and Russell Smith and Riley Cornelio that are off to really nice starts, and Charles Kane, a senior that, you know, has been around the block for them. You know, I feel bad for him at a 3.86. That's the third worst ERA on the entire team at 3.86.
Yeah, I looked at the stat sheet actually when we started this conversation, and I was like, boy, Charles King may be off to a slow start. I was like, oh, nope, wait, actually, he's been fine. It's just that everyone else has been so good. 3.86 is almost all the way down the stat sheet when you sort by ERA.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And then, you know, so we'll see what USC has on the mound, but they're sitting at 2.39 now. And I mentioned John Beller earlier. He's off to a really nice start at 2-0, 1.12. Isaac Escada, another guy that pitched well on the Cape this summer, is doing well. And Kyle Hurt, he has an incredible wealth of talent, still waiting on him to kind of put it all together. But there are guys on the mound there at USC that can really get things done as well. So I think you might be in for a classic West Coast, low-scoring kind of weekend.
I'd be here for it, honestly. I think that's kind of what you want to see when you go out there. Like I find it interesting that UCLA, for example, has kind of these dynamic offensive pieces like a Matt McClain, for example, a Garrett Mitchell. But what you really want to see when you go out there is, you know, we know these teams are going to pitch well, but who pitches best? Because that could be what it comes down to. So I think I would certainly be here for it. I think that's what you go out to a tournament like this to see, for sure.
The other really cool thing that's happening this year with this tournament is that you're actually going to be able to see it if you aren't there, because UCLA has figured out how to live stream some games this season.
All right.
So, shouts to UCLA. It's been a long time coming, but both of their home games will be streamed on Pac-12 Plus. Wherever you find that on UCLA's website, just go to the schedule. It'll pop up there,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Those are the free streams. Now, the Sunday game, it is showing as Pac-12 Networks, which,
correct.
So that one, the USC game will not be available online. But.
And I'm not sure that Vanderbilt TCU that morning will be streamed because, again, it's a Pac-12 Network day, not a Pac-12 stream day. But regardless,
we're moving in the right direction.
We are moving in the right direction. And USC, as always, streams its game. So you'll be able to see pretty much every game from this tournament, which... We're moving forward.
Yeah, man. That's I did not. This was news to me, the UCLA on the stream. So I know we've joked about that and given the program a hard time about that.
Some of us have not been joking.
Okay, fair enough. but we've talked about that a lot. But so in all seriousness, it is nice to see them to get that up and going and have more of an opportunity to see a program like UCLA that just frankly deserves the attention.
Yeah, the game against Vanderbilt on Friday night is a top five showdown.
Yeah, that's must-see TV, honestly. Honest to goodness, like one of my annoyances, and this is not a shot at anyone, it's just in general, like one of my annoyances is that the games the first 2 days are in the same exact time windows, so you can't do like a double dip, like you can't go to Jackie Robinson and then Dado for another game. Like they're in the same time windows, and that's kind of obnoxious to me. So at first I was kind of like looking, or you know, I didn't know what the breakdown of who was playing who, so I was debating, do I go to USC or do I go to UCLA Friday night? And then when I saw it was UCLA Vanderbilt, it was obviously not much of a, no disrespect to USC or TCU, but it was not much of a decision once I saw how that had broken.
The answer for me in the couple years I've covered it has just been you go sit at Jackie Robinson. That is just the way to do it, and that might be the answer this weekend as well. Although, again, we're a little uncertain about who's pitching for Vanderbilt right now, and so we'll see how that all shakes out. That could end up being Leiter, could end up being Eater, could end up being Rocker on Saturday at USC. So regardless of who among that group they pick to be their Saturday starter against the Trojans, it's going to be a fun one at Dado. So we'll see how that all plays out. Joe, I did want to ask the same question I asked last week about the Shriners College Classic, and that is, who has the most to gain this weekend?
I think it's TCU for me. I mean, I think very little could happen this weekend that would fundamentally change what I think, at least just speaking for myself, about UCLA and even to a certain degree Vanderbilt, even though they've sputtered at certain points. I mean, just the individual performances they've got. I feel like the production they've got, if you add that all together, is greater than what they've done with that production, if that makes sense. And so that leads me to believe that, like, I don't know exactly why they've sputtered a little bit, but it just is what it is. So I don't think with those two teams, and USC, of course, is just a wild card, but with those two teams, I don't see much that could happen that would really fundamentally change what I believe about them. With TCU, though, I could go two ways with what they do this weekend. I think there's a scenario where you look at them against Vanderbilt and UCLA, and they don't look much. They look like they belong. They don't look like it on a different level than those two teams. I also think there is a possibility they go out there and there is separation. And like, I'm not saying I would come out of thinking TCU is a bad team. They might not be up to that level, which is okay, by the way. You know, UCLA and Vanderbilt are operating at such a high level. But so there is just a range of outcomes for TCU that I think could change my priors about them. Whereas I don't feel that way about UCLA and Vanderbilt. And again, USC is just so much of a wild card.
Yeah, I think TCU is a strong answer. They're certainly positioned to make a move this weekend, like you said. I think, you know, I could see it being USC really making a move. Again, if they can establish some momentum here, it could carry them a long way. And while it might not carry them into the top 25, say, you know, they're sitting at 7-4 now. I don't know if 9-5 USC is going to be in the top 25 on Monday morning. But if they build that momentum and carry that into the start of Pac-12 play, like that's the start of a regional resume, which in the first year for Jason Gill, for a team that hasn't been to regionals in, I think, 4 or 5 years now.
15 would have been last 15, year.
That would be very significant. So I think that this could be the start of something. And they typically have played UCLA really well in Dodger Stadium. I think their record in that game is far superior to the record against UCLA in, you know, normal Pac-12 play. So I don't know if that'll carry over, but they do at least have a home game out of it this year. So I think that's something. And then I also think Vanderbilt has a chance to do something this weekend. I don't know that they have the most to gain here, but let's say Vanderbilt swept through this thing. Like, I would go back to feeling a lot better about the team that I picked to win the national championship and was the preseason number one team in the country, a lot better than I do right now, which, you know, is they barely won a series against Hawaii at home. So, you know, it's one weekend. I don't want to make too much of that Hawaii thing, but if they compound that by not playing particularly well out in LA, that becomes a thing, and then SEC play starts next week. So I think Vanderbilt maybe doesn't have the most to gain, but they do need a good weekend. Not that anyone, it's not a must win, nothing like that, but like just to, you know, reassure everyone before they start SEC play. Although I say all of that, next week they play Toledo and Kentucky at home, and that almost has to be four wins the way Kentucky's playing right now and where Toledo's at as a program. So they do have a little, like, there are no soft entries into the SEC play, but they actually found one. So if they do stumble this week, they can feel good about the fact that they can definitely get right next week. Joe, so you're going there. Who are you most looking out for? Who are you most excited to see?
I think it's those UCLA position players. You know, I know I talked about being excited to see how well the pitching goes, but I think what goes along with that is seeing how these offensive players for all teams, but especially UCLA, kind of handle that pitching. Because I admitted, you know, we've had in one of our editorial meetings here, I had to admit that, and part of this, by the way, is because of the lack of streaming of UCLA games. You know, I felt like some of the guys for UCLA, and I saw them last year against Georgia Tech, but I still felt like, you know, we have Garrett Mitchell, and Carlos, our draft writer, has Garrett Mitchell as, you know, a front half of the first round type player.
He's somewhere in the top 10 right now.
Yeah.
Just looking at it today.
And I don't know that much about him. Like, I know what the stats are. I know what the profile is. But I haven't seen him a lot. And then you've got Matt McClain, a guy who was a highly touted player coming in, turned down good money to come to college, but really struggled last year and looked overmatched, quite frankly, a lot of times. But he'd have these little starbursts of, like, moments where you saw it, but it could never put the consistency together. And this year it looks like he's doing that, at least so far. So, you know, guys like that, or Michael Curiel is another guy, you know, freshman this year, who looks like he's taken to it, at least better than McClain in that small sample size so far. So that position player group is interesting to me just because one of my own blind spots, where I could tell you a decent amount about UCLA pitching. And last year when I went to see them against Georgia Tech, I think I was just more focused on that part of it. So, because you'll remember, this seems like so long ago and it seems wackadoo now, but we did have questions about UCLA pitching coming into last year, believe it or not, which seems like
truly wild,
really dumb of us, but we did. And so I was pretty laser focused on, like, okay, this Georgia Tech offense is good. I don't even know that I thought it would be as good as it was, but the Georgia Tech offense is good. It's talented. What does UCLA pitching do? And the answer was pitch really well. And I think I just gave short shrift to that position player group, maybe outside of the draft eligible guys who are now gone. So I'm curious to see that in action and really kind of get a more well-rounded view of who these guys are.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a thing to watch. And if you are watching on TV, be that on the Pac-12 Network or on either USC or UCLA's live stream, you know, that's something to watch. And I'm very interested from afar at what TCU's arms do. You know, we ran off the stats there, you know, 213, team ERA, everything that some of these guys have done. Well, they're going to face, you know, really big-time pitching as well. So they're going to be counted on to pitch like that again this weekend, because I don't think it's reasonable that you're going to, you know, your offense can just put up 5-6 runs every game this weekend. If TCU is going to win this weekend, these guys are going to be counted on. So what does that look like then? And you know, some of these guys are, you know, new to college, like a Riley Cornelio is a freshman. Some of them are coming from junior college. Some of them have been around, like a Charles King. But what that looks like, I think, is going to be an important thing to watch. And why Joe was talking about, you know, TCU having the most to gain potentially is part of just that unknown of what it's going to look like in games where they have to pitch to win. What do these arms do on the road? All right, so we'll definitely circle back to the Southern California College Baseball Classic on Monday. Plenty to talk about once these games all play out. So we'll be looking for that. I want to switch coasts. Let's talk about the start of ACC play. ACC is the first major conference to open its conference play. They do it a week earlier than everyone else because they have a bye week built in, which is something that, you know, the SEC and Pac-12 do not, despite the fact that they all play the 30 conference games. But the ACC, for some of the more academically inclined schools, builds in a bye week for the finals. And that gets us conference play a week earlier out this way. We came into the season with Louisville and Miami as top five teams in the preseason, top 25. They were the clear-cut division favorites. That is where we entered the season. After 3 weeks, Joe, are you still there?
Well, yes and no. I know that's a boring answer, but the thing about it is I individually I do have little worries about Louisville and Miami. So with Louisville, it's that, you know, and maybe these are a little bit overblown, but I still think with Louisville, I think with as long as Dunn and Benelis are on the shelf, like it's hard for me to see. It's hard for me to see that there being enough impact offensively. Now, some of the guys we pointed to as guys that would need to step up have done so, guys like Levi Usher, Zach Britton, guys like that. So that's the part where maybe I'm underselling this a little bit, is maybe I have once again undersold Dan McDonald's ability to develop players over the course of, and his offensive coaches, Vrabel and Snyder, to develop offensive pieces through 2, 3, 4 years. So perhaps that's a thing. I wouldn't put it past myself to have undersold that again. But it just feels like they've had to work pretty hard to win some of these games. Now they did over the weekend, you know, after a close Friday game against Western Michigan, won the last two going away. So maybe that's just a case of, you know, most teams play their best baseball on Friday, and maybe that's what Western Michigan did and just couldn't keep up the last 2 days. But it does seem like Louisville has had to work hard for a lot of these wins. And that has worried me a little bit. And some of the offensive questions that we already had coming into the season about some of the dynamic players beyond Benelis and Dunn are now having to do it without Benelis and Dunn. And that gives me a little bit of pause. And with Miami, it's, you know, similar questions about the offense, but the difference is they're mostly healthy. It's just, you know, Raymond Gill hitting under 200 and Jordan Lala hitting under 200 and struggling to find pieces to fill in for the injured Freddie Zamora. They've tried to mix things around a little bit and really haven't figured that piece out yet. So their offense just hasn't quite lived up to where I was thinking it would be. The pitching has been, Slade Ciccone has maybe, you know, not been as good, but, you know, if we're talking 3 week sample size, but the pitching by and large has been good enough. Has been about what we expected it would be. It's been the offense that's been the more concerning piece, and that's going to continue to be my concern until they kind of prove otherwise on that. So the flip side of that, though, is if it's not those two as the favorites, you have to pick someone else. And that's where I kind of get stuck. You know, in the Atlantic, I like NC State.
The Atlantic's easy. That's NC State, right? They're 11-0.
Right. But then, like, have we seen this movie before with NC State? You know, it feels like they are a team that annually gets out to like a sprinting start, and it's just a matter of does it hold over the second half of the season. Now, what might be different for NC State, and now we're bleeding into like a different conversation here, but what might be different for NC State this year is Nick Swinney. The problem, to the extent that it was a problem, I mean, they've won a ton of games, but the issue with NC State in the past has been, you know, after Rodon left campus, you know, the struggle to find a Friday guy, or, you know, more than one guy who really gives them.
You run into Brian Brown.
He was a good pitcher, a good solid pitcher, but he wasn't the guy that was giving you.
He also pitched a lot on Saturdays.
And he was, and he wasn't always giving you the long dominant starts. I mean, he was a nice pitcher, so I'm probably selling him a little bit short. But by and large, NC State just hasn't had like a dude that's been able to get them deep, and they've relied on the bullpen heavily. Now, that's worked for them. They've had a good, versatile bullpen year after year. But I think we may be seeing Nick Swinney as a guy who is going to be able to give them seven every Friday, which sets them up to be able to use their bullpen a little more judiciously on Saturday and Sunday. And I think that's a big deal for them. So maybe in that division, I mean, that's the team. But I do worry a little bit that we're just hearing the next verse of a song we've heard before. And I think NC State's going to have to prove it to me a little bit more. And the Coastal, of course, is a little bit more of a, you know, everything's up in the air. I mean, Pitt is 10-1. You know,
so,
yeah, no kidding. But I like Duke, but like Duke has some of the same Louisville concerns in terms of not just the offensive piece, but you know, they've been in some close games with some teams I did not expect them to be in close games with, and you know what the pitching is going to be there. Virginia has come on strong after losing that opening series against Oklahoma, so I'm interested to see, you know, who do they have this weekend? Don't
they have
a big
NC
one?
State, and that's that's one of the premium series. The other one is Florida State coming to Duke. So those are two kind of banner ones, and like those are, I think all of those teams are the teams that are in the mix. Yeah, you know, with the exception of not getting Louisville into it, those four plus Louisville and, you know, Clemson has a case, I guess, right now. They've played pretty well against Liberty, Stony Brook, and South Carolina.
I mean, the thing about Clemson, I mean, they deserve to be in this conversation because they're in the top 25, absolutely. But I don't mean this disrespectfully, but like Clemson kind of ended up in the top 25. We were looking for teams, and you know, you reward a rivalry series win and their overall record and some of what they've done individually, like what Sam Weatherly did. But
yeah, I mean, like, but also Liberty, they swept Liberty, and Liberty is a regional team that we,
sure,
they were a regional team last year. We expect them to be a regional team again. And I know both of us did not expect to see a sweep on opening weekend against Liberty.
That's true. That's a good point.
And Stony is, you know, Stony Brook's 2-8, but you know, they're better than that.
I'm sure they start off every year similarly. I mean, that's just the nature of what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know that we know a ton about Clemson. Like, I'm not here to say that Clemson has this incredible resume, but I think that it's a very highly respectable resume. And frankly, we're not going to know a ton about them for a while. They have, you know, until they play one of those other like leading contenders we were talking about, we're waiting until April for that.
Wow.
When they go to Louisville. So it's very backloaded for them. They close the first 5 weeks of conference play. They avoid all of that. And then they close at Louisville, at Duke, NC State, at Miami, Florida State. So they need to make some hay early. But we'll see what comes from them. I think that I'm still good with Louisville and Miami as being the favorites. I think they have the best pitching in the conference by far. When we're looking at starting and bullpens and pro, you know, guys throwing 95, whatever, like, I think they have the best compilation of that in the conference. I think State's pitching is getting better. And what you said about Nick Swinney is a huge thing for them. I, to say I'm skeptical of the start would be wrong. That's not really where I'm at. I just kind of wonder, you know, before last weekend when they went up and beat some Big Ten teams pretty well in Minnesota, you know, Tennessee Tech and James Madison, they swept them. It's not doing a whole lot for me. I'm very interested to see what happens in a true road series at Virginia, a team that, you know, so if I was ranking pitching in the ACC, it would be Louisville and Miami and then UVA and UNC as like the next two. And so now NC State's pitching has a chance to get on that UNC-UVA level for me, but now they have to do it on the road at UVA, which is going to throw it really well. So I'm very interested in how that series plays out. I'm maybe more interested in how that series plays out than anything else this weekend, including Florida State at Duke, because I think I know what Florida State and Duke are at reasonably well. But with Virginia and NC State, there's, to me, still an element of unknown in both of those teams, and I'm looking for more clarity. I'm looking for the information that those two playing a series in Charlottesville should be able to give us. And so that's a really fun, low-key series that I think maybe is flying a little under the radar because Virginia doesn't have a number next to its name. But to me, even more than the top 25, top 15 series we have between Florida State and Duke, which is going to be really fun and I'm going to be at, I'm very interested in the results that transpire in Charlottesville this weekend.
And I think ultimately I come to back to where you were to circle back on the original question. I think I too am still good with Louisville and Miami as the favorites, but I just wonder if it's not the runaway that maybe we thought it was. Maybe the ACC is perhaps as deep but more condensed than we thought.
Yeah, and I think with Louisville's injuries and Miami's injuries, you take out Zamora, Benelis, and Dunn from these three teams, like, no, those are dudes,
yeah,
and they're gone. Those are like first team all ACC guys, all American type players, and you know, to remove them from those teams, you know, of course those teams are going to suffer for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Now that means as observers and as people who cover it, that just kind of makes it maybe a little more interesting. So we'll have to see, but it does feel like maybe it's the league is a little bit more condensed than we were giving it credit for in the preseason, and there are good reasons for that you laid out. But certainly, the Miami and Louisville, as it stands now, have come back to the pack just a little bit.
I mean, and honestly, I think that's good news for the league. If the goal, I mean, I guess it depends on what your goal is. If the goal is to get a national champion for what, the second time in like 60 years at this point, you need Louisville and Miami operating at full strength. Those are probably the two best shots this year. But if the goal is to just get a ton of teams in regionals, what they have right now, I think sets up pretty well for that. That, you know, there might not be these elite teams that are ready to separate, but you could see them getting to 10 regional bids again, which would just be the second time the ACC has done that. And frankly, you could see them be the team to, or be the conference to break the record and maybe put in 11, which the SEC has come very close to the last couple of years, but hasn't quite been able to do. But if teams like Virginia Tech, which is off to a 7-3 start, and Wake Forest, which stumbled at Long Beach for sure, but if those teams can kind of keep it going or get it together or whatever, then the conference is in a position to be incredibly deep again.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's certainly something to watch too. I mean, I'm not always great about kind of recalibrating as the season goes on, and so you take a team like Wake Forest that we rank coming out of the preseason and we feel good about, and then they take a, you know, they take a series loss early on, and we kind of push them to the back, and it's easy, unless that team just gets right back to ripping off wins, it's easy to kind of forget about them. And this happened actually with Wake Forest last year. We weren't as high on them as some others, but still thought it was a team with potential. And then they kind of got in the hole early, and then lo and behold, here they came up the, you know, kind of through the back door. And that can happen in leagues like the ACC, where, you know, the bar for entry on getting into a regional isn't always super high, and you're going to get a lot of opportunities for RPI bumps, where if you're just avoiding getting swept on the road and you're mostly taking care of business at home, that's usually all you really need in these leagues to put yourself in a position to get into a regional. And so for these teams that are kind of on the low end of the middle of the pack in the ACC, right now it might seem like, boy, that's, you know, a tough thing to overcome. Like even a team like BC that's under 500 to start the year, it might be easy to write them off, but if they start taking care of business in the ACC, it doesn't take that long for them to be right back in position. And that's how you end up with a year when they could get that type of volume of teams into the field.
I didn't come into this intending to talk Wake Forest, but so Wake got swept at Long Beach and then came back home and lost to App State. So like pretty bad stretch there. But they've won five straight since. The competition has not been good. There's no way around that. The five teams they've beaten have won a total of, let me do some quick math here. What is that? Nine games total spread them on three teams. This week, though, they get Louisville at home, then they get Clemson at home, and then they go to NC State. And those 3 weeks are going to be very telling. And so if Wake Forest has come back together, gotten something figured out after that no good, very bad week, they could be in a position to really make some hay this over the next month. Or this could snowball on them and Wake Forest could find themselves digging out of a very deep hole. And so that all starts this weekend at home against Louisville, which is going to be an interesting series as well. I'm not sure I'm going to get out there. We'll see. It's possible. I'm not quite sure. But I do know I'll be at Florida State and Duke. And Joe, the Noles have been interesting. They lost on opening day to Niagara, then kind of righted the ship, but the competition has not been incredible until this last weekend when they then went 2-2 against FAU and Texas Tech. So I don't know that we know a ton, and so I'm going to be very interested just to see them up close, see what they've got in the rotation in Van Eyck and Drohan, what DeSantis is looking like, Cabela's been hitting really well. Matt Nelson behind the plate. It's a good collection of talent, and it now faces a pretty tough test on the road for the first time this season with the Blue Devils, who we know can pitch, and you're playing in a bit of a bigger ballpark there, certainly bigger than what Florida State is doing down in Tallahassee. The Durham Bulls Athletic Park is a AAA ballpark, and it plays like it. But the Blue Devils are young, so this is a nice test for them as well to start conference play.
Yeah, certainly an opportunity for us to learn about both teams. Florida State, I can confidently say, you said you're not sure you know what Florida State exactly is. I'm confident to say that I don't know what they are, and some of that is because they've mostly won. I mean, that you laid out the competition there, and losing both of those games to Texas Tech was kind of a tough break there. They would have really liked to have gotten at least one of those, but
especially as close as they were.
Right, exactly. I mean, they were both basically coin flip games that they both went against Florida State. But you look at the offense, and, first of all, 257 as a team Is not exactly what you're, you know, you come to expect from Florida State, although they are, in very Florida State fashion, getting on base at a 436 clip. So that's...
Some things do not change.
Yeah, that is very on brand for Florida State. But like, individually, like, Reese Albert is under 200. Like, Elijah Cabell has 5 home runs, but he's hitting 243.
That's Elijah Cabell, I feel like.
I mean, yes.
Not 243 necessarily, but like,
you'll take
somewhere.
You'll take the 5 home runs, though, too. And Nander DeSantis is under 200, and so... you know, Matt Nelson is up to 256. I feel like when we had this conversation last week or whenever it was, he was actually under 202. So Robbie Martin has been right on track. But it's the guys who we kind of expected to carry the water for Florida State here have not been the guys necessarily offensively that have been doing so. So I will be eager to hear from you what you saw over the weekend with Duke and Florida State, because they are, you know, Duke being so close to where we are here, and yet. Because the competition has kind of been what it's been, I haven't seen a ton of them. I mean, I know what's going on there pitching wise, and you know, surprise, surprise, Duke is pitching well again and showing that that's going to be a strength for them. So a good opportunity for one of these teams to get off on the right foot and kind of start building. They're a little bit different than some of the teams at the lower middle pack of the ACC, or even just the middle of the pack of the ACC, where they're starting to try to build cases to host regionals. That's kind of what they have their sights set on. And if they want to do that, they've got to keep an eye on winning 2 of 3 basically every weekend. And so, tough task with Florida State being on the road. I presume it'll be a little bit chilly here. I'll be in SoCal, so I have not looked at the weather here at all, to be honest with you. So conditions, you know, could be a little bit challenging for a team from Florida that has mostly played at home, I presume. Have they played on the road at all?
Have not.
Yeah,
on the road
so you know, played at home all season long. So going on the road for the first time, that could be a potential challenge and a great opportunity for Duke to get a series win that should age like a fine wine as the season goes on.
Now, I believe they were supposed to play on the road on Tuesday.
Oh, against Mercer.
Against Mercer. Got moved to Tallahassee because the weather in Georgia wasn't great. And then Florida State was probably thrilled that happened, because they went on a walk-off when Tyler Martin, who is a freshman and the son of Mike Martin Jr., he hit the game winner. So that was a cool moment. Saw that one on the TV. And yes, to your point, we have weather in the 50s this weekend with a low on Saturday of 29 degrees. So enjoy SoCal, Joe.
Yeah, I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna be all tan, you know, and you know, just like been sunning myself out there. I'm not actually gonna go cover the game at Pepperdine. I'm just gonna lay in the bleachers and listen to the waves crash up against the rocks. But yeah, so that can be a challenge for a team that hasn't. I mean, being on the road for the first time is enough of a challenge. I was talking to a coach this weekend, and I'm not playing coy. I honestly don't remember who it was this past weekend at the LeClaire Classic in Greenville, but you know, they said that, you know, going on the road is just for the first time is kind of a challenge, because you've got, in college baseball, you've got enough new players, and this is a new experience for a lot of them. You know, being, you know, away at college and being on this team, and then you go away and you're staying in a hotel, and like, you just don't know how they're going to act, you know, and I think sometimes it's easy to kind of downplay that because we kind of assume this level of professionalism from these highly skilled individuals. But you know, I remember when I was 18, and if, you know, going away on a first road trip, I'd be super excited, but I don't know that I'd be able to control my emotions, and then it would probably wear on me a little bit because my roommate I found annoying or something, you know, just some like petty 18-year-old something or rather would have got on my nerves. So there are a lot of things that can happen with that. So I think it's a good opportunity for Duke and an opportunity for us to learn a little more about Florida State.
Yeah, that is the great thing about the start of conference play, is it is a great time to start learning more about these teams, because you start getting more, you know, similar level of opponents and same teams playing each other. You get common opponents, and so it's we will finally find out some more about some of these teams, and I am very much looking forward to that this weekend. I just want to throw out a couple other series. I don't want to dwell on these, but if you're looking around for things this weekend, San Diego State is going to Oklahoma. That is an intriguing series. The Aztecs are off to a nice start to the season at 9-4. That's the Mountain West favorite, a team that I feel like if they get into a regional is going to be a dangerous team in a regional. And of course, Oklahoma coming off of a great performance at the Shriners College Classic, and then beat DBU on Tuesday. So they're in a good spot, and now San Diego State has to go to Norman. So that's an intriguing series. And I mentioned it before, UCSB heading up to Oregon State. That's the home opener for the Beavers, at least the home series opener. I don't think they played a midweek this week. And the start of the Mitch Canham era in Corvallis. And UCSB, like I mentioned early on, delivered the first loss of the season for UCLA on Tuesday night. And UCSB is now 10-2. It's a team that obviously had a really successful 2019, won the Big West, lost a ton of talent to the draft, and I think a lot of people were looking at it like, well, the Gauchos have to take a step back now. Well, at least so far, they haven't, and I really think that this team can be pretty solid throughout the whole season. When you have guys like Rodney Boone at the front of the rotation, they have some nice pieces back in the lineup. McLean and Castanon in the infield are both really good players. I think that the Gauchos are a team to watch for in the Big West, which has been very competitive so far this season, and this is another chance for a Big West team to add some marquee wins, which obviously would help the Gauchos, but also would lift the tide for everyone in the Big West.
Yeah, it's funny, we talked about how maybe this year, and maybe this doesn't come to pass, we talked about the possibility that the pack could be down this year from where they were last year. But I mean, so for one, that may not, that still is the jury is going to be out on that one for a long, long time, because they do have the benefit of play being the Pac-12. But the West Coast in general, I think, is in an interesting spot where we've talked about the Big West opportunities to go and make sure they get at least a second team into regionals, and the Mountain West Conference has been in a position to do that, and San Diego State could further that by showing well in Norman this weekend. And I was doing some
in the West Coast Conference. Pepperdine this weekend has Michigan at home, and San Diego, which is off to a 9-3 start, visits Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say. I crunched some numbers on like non-conference one loss by conference for three strikes this week, and you can't make big grand statements with it, but it's always interesting because everyone has just played non-conference to this point. And I think the West Coast Conference is setting itself up for an opportunity to push to get at least one more team into regionals with just what they've done so far, because this is going to get into the weeds, so prepare yourself. But we talk so much about how the Big West has struggled because they didn't win non-conference games. They scheduled, many of the teams out there schedule very aggressively, but they weren't winning enough of those games. Well, they're winning more of them this year. Then you've got teams like San Diego State, for example, out west that do that and typically win more and give themselves that opportunity. And the West Coast Conference has been in a bad spot where they've got some teams that have done a nice job out there. Gonzaga, San Diego some years is in that position. BYU nearly got there last year. So the problem has been, though, with the West Coast Conference is there are typically a couple of teams at the bottom of the league that serve as anchors on the RPI. And, not just in terms of when you play them, it hurts your RPI, but also because their win-loss records were so poor that it was really having this cascading effect. But, I mean, don't look now. I mean, this is a conference that has Portland, which has not historically been one of, now they've been better the last couple of years, but I mean, that was a team that finished in last place something like 3 or 4 years in a row at one point in the recent past. Santa Clara has been stuck at the bottom of the league for a long time. I mean, they've done well against a tough schedule, including a series against Georgia. I mean, they played 4 games against Georgia and they only have 5 losses. So that is, pretty impressive when you consider most of those losses, 3 of them came from the Georgia series. So it is too
early. Pacific is above 500, which is significant for them, especially with Ryan Garko having left in January to take a job with the Angels. And San Francisco's under 500 right now, but is coming off of a series win against Fullerton, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, and then you look at the bottom of the league and you see Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and LMU that have all played difficult schedules, and they're not going to be at the bottom of the league once conference play starts. So
I'm less certain about St. Mary's. There was a talent exodus after last year, but Gonzaga and LMU are definitely going to rise.
Even still, okay. So, maybe St. Mary's is in for a tough year, but those other two for sure. And so I say all that to say, it may be a little bit too early to really be super declarative about this, but it does look like it's starting to shape up for a year for the West Coast Conference, where as long as there are a handful of teams that really rise to the top of that league and everyone's not hovering around the same conference record, this could be a two-bid league in the West Coast Conference again, which it has been in the past. That's not groundbreaking, But the conditions are such that it could be the type of year where they've got a couple teams that are clearly in the field as opposed to really having to work for it.
Yeah, and you know the level of play there has always been pretty solid. Now it's just a matter of, like, can you, you know, get some of these big time series wins. And so I mentioned San Diego and Pepperdine. Well, BYU is at Oklahoma State this weekend. That's another good series that gives them an opportunity. So that's another one to keep an eye out on. Joe, we this week also reported on some news, scaling back or rewinding, I guess, a little. We've been talking about what's to come this weekend. We're now going to rewind it back to Tuesday, I guess, when we reported that the American Athletic Conference next year will will unveil a novel scheduling concept for the 2021 and 2022 seasons. So the American presently has 9 teams in its league. UConn is headed back to the Big East after this season, and that will leave the American with 8 teams, which they operated at for a few years there after the first season of the conference, which still included Louisville and Rutgers.
It was weird. There were a couple of teams that, it was a weird deal.
Yeah. They were at 8 teams for a while, and they did not like their scheduling format with 8 teams because they didn't want to play just 21 conference games. That they didn't feel like that was enough. They needed to play 24. And so back then, they gave each team a travel partner that they played home and home with, and then they played everyone else in the league still. So some of those made sense. USF played UCF 6 times, home and home. Great. Fantastic rivalry. War on I-4. But also it meant that, like, UConn played ECU 6 times, which has no natural rivalry. And this led to some significant scheduling imbalance. So that all got solved when Wichita State joined the league, and then they just went to everyone plays everyone 3 times. But now, having lost UConn, they did not want to go back to that old format. So instead, they came up with this concept where they would play on the first weekend of conference play. They're going to hold 2 4-team tournaments, one at Central Florida, one at South Florida, and those games are going to count as conference games. And they haven't figured out what the pods are going to look like yet. That there's some sort of algorithm that's going to be determined after the season, I guess. And they're going to get to 24 games with what should be a relatively balanced strength of schedule for everyone in the conference. This is kind of a throwback to something the Southwest Conference did in 1995 and 96. It's not clear to me whether those games counted as conference games back then. The Southwest Conference records are somewhere in a library in Lubbock. So the next time I'm in Lubbock, maybe I'll go and find out exactly. But they had a similar setup. They played those games in Houston. And so for the next 2 years, at least, that's how long the American is committed to this tournament structure. They're going to do it this way. They're probably going to keep doing this, assuming no conference realignment. It's just that they might not keep doing them at USF and UCF, that they might, Tulane and Houston are also options to host such tournaments. So it's interesting, and, we both are, when we first heard about it, I think both of our ears perked up.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. We heard it independent of each other. We heard it, 2 separate places from 2 unrelated people, except that they are associated in some way with the league. It was interesting that we both kind of heard it that way. But I think it's a great idea. It's an outside-the-box idea, and obviously it's happened before, and, so it's not a completely novel idea. But it's a great bit of outside-the-box thinking, and I mean, we wrote about some of why it's a positive for the league. I mean, one, staying at 24 league games keeps you from having a condensed schedule where, everyone finishes, within 2.5 games of each other, for example, which could happen. The 3 extra games doesn't sound like a lot, but it really kind of can help stretch out the standings a little bit and allow the cream to rise. The other thing is that, they already play a shorter conference schedule than it's similar. It's the Big 12, kind of similar in length there, but it's not the 30 games you see with the ACC and the SEC. And so they were going to be, if they didn't do this and they decided to go back to 21 games, they're going to be looking at scheduling a 7th non-conference weekend. And A, there's no guarantee what you could get, and actually it's most likely what you would get with the seventh non-conference weekend is going to be worse for the metrics than three more league games. And beyond that, you know, good luck finding someone to come to your place or even go on the road in, you know, late March when everybody else is in conference play and it isn't even really deep enough in conference play to want to take a bye week, even if they could. The logistics of that, you know, really would be dictating what you'd get, but that just would be very much a roll of the dice. And so this really gives them a little bit of scheduling certainty, which I think is a real positive for the league, maximizing its postseason prospects and also having an opportunity for teams to really rise to the top.
Yeah, the big thing, I think, is the RPI part of this, that you know, they aren't going to take a hit by scheduling just whatever Southland Conference or Big South Conference or, you know, whoever they can find, you know, one of these leagues with an awkward number of teams. You know, there have been some pretty good non-conference series for AAC teams, but scheduling seven of those is a bear. So I think that that's the most significant thing. And then I think the other thing is that because they're going to do this and it's going to be so different, they're going to get more buzz. You know, we're going to spend some time talking about this next year because everyone else is going to be doing their normal thing, and it's going to happen at a time when, like, the SEC play has already been going for a couple weeks, so it's not going to be novel that SEC teams are playing each other anymore. Like, this is going to be something a little off the wall, and we're going to be very interested to see how it goes. And so I think the league can get maybe a little more buzz out of it, you know, just by coming together. I think you also have to acknowledge that what USF and UCF are going to do here is pretty significant, that, you know, this is not going to be a small undertaking, and they are going to get three extra home games out of this, which in some ways is good and in some ways is bad. I think they're trying to figure out if they can somehow make these all neutral site games for everyone, because that is a slight bit of an RPI hit for USF and UCF to play these extra home games now. That might be mitigated just by the fact that they get to stay in their own bed. I wouldn't be too concerned about that if I was those people in those programs, but you know, I know that is a consideration that the league is looking at. And you know, I just like the creativity here, because you know, we've seen leagues try and figure very complex schedules out before and often struggle to find the kind of consensus that the American was able to find here. You know, I know the Big Ten has, you know, I've talked to John Anderson, who's been in that league for pretty much, I think, my entire life, probably longer than I've been alive. And he told me that he has this file of all of the scheduling debates they've ever had as coaches. And anytime that something comes up, he like looks in the file and like inevitably they've talked about it before. And so the Big Ten has been trying to solve their problem forever. And here the American has found a solution that's better than the solution they found the last time. You know, it might be a little wonky, but I do think it's fairer for everyone, and that it has the ability to generate some more interest than at least you're just a Wichita State, Memphis, you know, home and home. I'm not really feeling it. But you put these teams in a tournament for a weekend, you know, I think that that's something that college baseball fans can get more into.
Yeah, and for folks like us, I mean, you know, Houston and New Orleans, the logistics of that are a little bit more difficult. It's a little bit further apart, but certainly, I mean, this is, we're you know, the cart is way in front of the horse, that the horse can't even see the cart anymore. But it increases the likelihood someone like you or I goes down there next year and covers this thing, because it's, you know, Tampa and Orlando, and you could do that. You know, you could go to both locations fairly easily and kind of see the whole thing taking shape. So I think it's a masterstroke. I mean, and that was not their top line priority there, but it is a nice little benefit. But I just think in general, I think this is a masterstroke of figuring out a situation where the easy thing to do would just be like, we've done this before, let's just go back to the way it was. And people might come, you know, the people who have the disadvantageous schedules will complain about it, but for a while, but then it'll probably just go away. Life will go on. We'll all move on. so on and so forth. That would have been the easy thing to do. So kudos to them for kind of moving past that, what I assume was the starting point of the conversation, and figuring something else out.
Do you like it at the start, or would you like it more at the end? Like, what if the trophy was on the line at these tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think that the coaches would probably go for that. I mean, maybe though. I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit. But so I think the best place to put it, just from general interest and fun, would be towards the end of the year. But I think to really kind of have it be the least disruptive thing to the schedule is probably putting it at the beginning. And also, it does create an event out of starting American Conference play. I have to admit, a lot of times American Conference play starts, and to your point about the SEC, you know, and certainly the ACC, which is a week earlier than the SEC, like, we're kind of at that point used to those teams playing each other, and then American Conference play starts, and you're like, oh yeah, you know, because for a while we've just been kind of discarding the American as, well, they haven't started playing each other yet, so on and so forth. So it does kind of create a situation where the start of that league play is a little bit of an event, which I think is something.
I'll certainly know when it happens. You know, that is one thing that hasn't always been as apparent, because it doesn't, you know, it's disconnected from everyone else. You know, even the Big Ten, I think, starts earlier because they throw in some bye weeks and stuff. So I like it overall. I like the outside the box thinking, and definitely credit to all of the coaches involved for doing something a little bit different. And, you know, I'll be very interested to see how it goes next year, and then, you know, where it goes from there, how they continue to develop this idea, or whether they abandon it completely because they decide they hate it. I mean, I suppose that is an option here.
It's on the table.
The Southwest Conference stopped doing it because it broke up. So hopefully this doesn't foretell the breakup of the American in 2 years. But, you know, it should bring some buzz to the league, and I'm just interested to see how it all plays out. All right, so with that, Joe, we are gonna wrap it up here today. We'll have plenty more to talk about on Monday when we have a new Top 25. There's a lot of content over at the website if you're still looking for college baseball, your college baseball fix. Joe has his Three Strikes piece up, focusing, you can read some more about the WCC. That's where that info came from. He'll have some Ole Miss stuff in there as well, so you can check that out. You also can look for what to watch this weekend, which includes where you can watch it all the top 25 teams on TV/streaming devices. So those are two things to keep your eye out for over at baseballamerica.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. And we love it when you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever podcasts are found. You can subscribe to us there and get it right in your phone as soon as the episode posts. And if you are doing that and want to leave us a rating or a review, let us know what you like about the podcast, or ask us a question there. We appreciate that as well. I want to thank Roman again for sponsoring this episode of the Baseball America podcast. And remember, you can go to getroman.com/BA for your free online visit and free 2-day shipping. We will be back here on Monday. Like I said, there will be a new Top 25. We'll talk about all of the action that Joe saw out in SoCal and that I saw here with the start of ACC play and everything that happens in between. So until then, thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.